committers in Oxford that where we got talking about content models. That was one of the themes of this. It was a users meeting, but it tended to be mostly technical people who were there. And we started talking about the possibility of getting a face-to-face meeting together of the committers and other contributors. And so I've been thinking about it and starting to work on ways that we could make this happen. And it turns out that Chris and I will both be in London at the end of February for some other meetings. And we were looking at the possibility of seeing if we could get together a face-to-face committers meeting in London for whoever could come. We'd like to get everybody and have all the committers invite other possible contributors who are interested in working with stuff to do with Fedora and might be willing to take on some code development, whether or not, and if they're interested in becoming committers, all the better. But if they're not, they still, we can start to draw them into our orbit a little bit. So I was just starting to, part of my role in all this is to see if I can make things like that happen and find the way to get funding and get meeting space and that kinds of thing, those kinds of things. So I just wanted to throw it out there to everybody and see what the thinking was, if anyone was interested. Does that make sense to you guys?
It makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think it'd be a great idea.
I had thought about after when I was on the plane back from that meeting when I'd been at Oxford, we had talked about content models and a lot of potential software development around and like looking at Asker's extended, what is it, ECM? What does the E stand for?
Enhanced content models.
Enhanced content models, yeah. So to start moving the CMA related stuff in further into more interesting functionality and developing tools to use with it was a real, we had a lot of discussion about that at that meeting. I also have been thinking about all the issues related to caching in Fedora, both for large data sets and for performance reasons. Everywhere I go when I'm talking to people, I'm hearing about this as being an important thing to be done. I wouldn't mind, if we could have such a meeting, getting the extended content models and related functionality, sort of large-scale data, or internal caching, I guess, is the way to say it. And then the other thing people have been talking about a lot lately is sort of different ways that Fedora integrates with back-end storage, different strategies for organizing back-end storage. I was just throwing those out as possible sort of straw man topics for an agenda for that kind of meeting. But I think the idea that the theme of the meeting would be to start discussing in a face-to-face way, discussing the next few releases and what the sort of target functionality for adding to Fedora would be, and having a chance to, Chris and I have talked about this a little bit. I'd like to see it be a two-day meeting if we could, but if it were only a one-day meeting, we could at least get a start. And I find that when you do these kinds of face-to-face meetings, even if they're short, they tend to enhance the ability to do these virtual meetings and email and all the other exchanges that go on. So we could set something in motion that would continue, would help these, like these phone calls, you know, work on things more intensely in one place together for a little while. So that was the notion. So I'm assuming that it would be good to have the committers actually, this be a committers take charge of this meeting, that this is a committers meeting that we invite other people to, and that each of you would invite people who you knew were interested in possibly good marks to get some more contributions from people. It just seems like a good opportunity to start pulling all that together.
So, Thorny, what potential dates are we talking about?
I was just looking back at, I have to go back to the calendar. I should have done this earlier. February the 24th is a Wednesday, and that's the first day of the DevAD meetings that David Flanders is putting together. And I don't know how many of the committers would be at that, but we could probably find a meeting place in London somewhere. Chris and I have a meeting on that Monday, February 22nd, and there's another meeting on the Tuesday, February 23rd, which we may or may not have to go to. So we were thinking in there, that Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday possible, somewhere in those 3 days, to organize a meeting.
Thorny, are you hearing that background noise at all? I'm not sure if anybody else is either, but...
No, I'm
yeah,
not hearing
I'm hearing it also, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hearing it also. I turned my mic in case it was me.
I don't know. It sounded like it was picking up the more Thorny was talking, but...
I'm going to mute myself right now to see if that helps.
Okay. Yeah, I think that might have been it. I'm not not positive, but it sounded like it was kicking in quite a bit while you were speaking, yeah. Thorny. Okay, well, if you're on Bluetooth...
I'm actually on a headset.
Oh,
shoot.
So,
but I muted a while away.
Okay, got it back.
It's getting worse.
Okay, well, anyway, I'm going to mute myself now.
Okay.
So let's talk about my own future conversation, but it's coming up really soon, so we need to plan it if I'm going to do it, I'll do it. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Thorny. So just to reiterate, the week we're looking at is the week of the 24th, possibly Tuesday, sometime between Tuesday and Thursday, that week in February. So that would be good for folks just to start kind of thinking about availability around that time. And we'll... I'm sure we'll talk about this in more detail, as Thorny said, over email, and maybe the next meeting we'll have some more firm information on that. But it would be really nice to get everybody together and talking about the next generation of the content modeling and these other high interest areas. So thanks for that, Thorny. One thing I didn't include on the agenda, but maybe we could just flip through it a little bit, is the our regular review of items that had come through. I don't know if folks saw. I did see a couple items come through on the tracker over the break. They didn't seem too critical. Just in terms of the remaining documentation for 3.3, I just wanted to make sure we've still got that coming through. I think the big things that I can think of is one that I owe for the documentation, which is some detailed info in the install guide on using the Microsoft SQL connector, because that's not an actual install option. But there's a set of instructions. Actually, they're in the tracker. It's just a matter of pulling that stuff from the tracker and putting it in the install doc so people have a clearer way to try that out. So I'll be working on that this week. Should be a pretty quick job. And then I think we also have the updates for the REST documentation outstanding, right?
Yeah, they are still outstanding. I'm still working on them. I thought I would work on them over Christmas, but that never happened.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm sorry. So I'm working on them now, actually, right at this moment. But they will not be. At best, they will be done this week, and that is at best.
Yeah. Okay. And I noticed, Asger, that you had also posted some items in the tracker as you were going through it. Earlier.
Yeah, those minor bugs or things that people should be aware of that I would consider bugs. I don't recall what they were now. I just recalled I kept posting small bugs.
Okay.
We could look at them, but they're pretty self-explanatory once you see them.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll flip through the items that are that need any questions answered on this call, if there are any. We'll just go through them real quick and see. For the other topic I wanted to hit, and of course anybody can kick in on any other post 3.3 items, but we talked about just prior to the release we talked about the possibility of changing the packaging to reflect our group IDs, and decided at that time that it really didn't make sense to do just prior to the release, because we wanted to give people a certain amount of time to adjust to the new packaging. And it just felt like quite a large change to be making that late in the cycle. So I just wanted to revisit that again and ask if we're now in a position where we can start the great repackaging. I know we said previously that doing it shortly after the 3.3 release would make sense, but I just wanted to ping the group again and see if there were any gotchas to doing that now.
There's no gotcha, but I was made aware. I can't say I noticed it myself. I was made aware by my colleague Cor that if we should take this name and package refactoring to the full, we probably should look at the info Fedora namespace that we use. If that should be changed to info fcrepo.org.
Okay, you mean for the when we use it for namespaces for like.
Well, when
XML,
we use it when we use it for turning our persistent identifier into a URL. URI. We do it in all the relations and so on. If the prefix info fedora perhaps should be changed to reflect the new package names as well.
URI namespace is used, yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I'm trying to be sure I understand. This was more about the URI, like of when we turn PIDs into URIs, like
yeah
demo. Oh, okay.
But it has the old it just says Fedora like we did everywhere earlier. And if we're going to change that, we might consider changing.
I see. So info, like it could be something like info FC repo instead of info Fedora, or
yeah, that was that's at least a suggestion. I don't know if you can use dots in it, but okay. Something like this, as I just posted on the chat board.
Yeah.
That would mean registering that with the URI registry for the info scheme, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So that we could. Yeah.
I don't know if it would be a good idea. I just thought of might bring it up when we're discussing this renaming and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It certainly seems like we should strive for consistency wherever possible.
Yeah. I'm trying to see. Let's see, registry entries. So the info scheme right now has what about 25 to 30 items in it. I don't think it's difficult to add something there. It's a little harder, I think, to go ahead and change name. I mean, just since it is kind of a centralized registry based on our renaming. But it strikes me that this kind of change, while, you know, just using fcrepo.org consistently makes sense, that this could actually be done. I mean, there's no interdependency with this kind of change versus the Java package names, right?
No, there are no interdependencies. Nothing will break by not changing one of them. It's solely for consistency.
Yeah.
And as you sort of mentioned earlier, Chris, it might make sense to consider changing the FoxMall the namespaces we use in Foxmal and schema locations, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Since they're all info Fedora currently also.
Yeah.
But again, no interdependencies.
And that is going to be a change that has a lot of external dependencies.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that too, because, you know, if it's just internal Java code, then it's mainly, you know, people who are developing libraries or stuff like that that have an issue. But, you know, the consequences of changing, like, the namespace URIs and, like, all the triples and, you know, all that public stuff is perhaps a bit more weighty than just changing the stuff in the Java code, you know.
Yeah, it means that anyone who's got existing article queries in an application, for instance, would have to change those queries.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Right, so there's an impact in changing the info URIs to be consistent and also in changing the namespace URIs. I mean, I think, you know, it's certainly fair for us to consider everything. Just if we could have our way, what would we want everything to be? And then, you know, just consider how much of an impact each thing would really present and whether it's worth doing it. So those are at least two things that are related to this renaming that I think we could probably create, at least keep them on the tracker so we have them on our radar. But it seems like everybody would like to be able to do this, to make those names consistent. It's just a question of, you know, getting down to the details on what the impact is and how we can potentially make it happen with reducing the impact, or just say, well, maybe the impact's too much. The Java side, renaming the Java packages is something we've already talked a little bit about the impact, and it's at least for developers, particularly people who have developed storage plugins. And we've already kind of talked about how to mitigate that a little bit on that side. And, I mean, one way was providing sort of possibly a compatibility jar or something where we allow people to use older plugins that happen to be compiled for the old package name. And there's also tricks we may be able to use to mitigate the URI issue, at least for namespace URIs. You know, it strikes me that if people are resolving those, which we know they do, the schema locations, it would be kind of nice for those to be delivered from a consistent space as well. And I know some of those schema locations and namespace URIs are also even older than the Info Fedora change that we made several years ago. Some of them are like com.nsdlib.org something. But, you know, potentially redirects can help with those. So there's a question of the scope of this whole change, I guess. And I think it would be good for us to consider each of these as, you know, contributing to this overall goal of consistency, but we can attack each of these as separate items that could be done. Are there any other gotchas or potential areas of concern with consistency in names that folks can think of now?
Well, how do you want to handle bug fixes during the refactoring period?
I mean, it seems like if we were to do like a 3.1 release or something that was a bug fix only, we could
certainly spin off a branch off of the release tag. So far, it hasn't seemed like that would be necessary. So the assumption right now is that we have the next release is a 3.4. We don't yet have a release manager identified, but it seems like we could still deal with bug fixes in the same context. I mean, they have to be fixed either for a 3.4 release or a potential 3.3.1, but I guess what I'm saying is applying them to trunk, whether we start this process now or not, makes sense. And then if we end up having to do something that's 3.3.1, then we have to backport them.
It would be good if we're going to do sort of any mass renaming stuff to have that kind of scheduled when we're not doing bug fixing. Because that does make life a little bit easier. I don't know whether it's worth waiting a little while as a few folks download the new release and try it out just to see if anything that potentially would need to go into a 0.1 release crops up, you know, just in case there are any gotchas that we've missed or whatever. I don't know.
So that's I think we could like wait maybe a couple weeks. I mean, in reality, a lot of people probably haven't even looked at 3.3 yet, given the fact that everybody went on break right when we released it. So I'm not in a big hurry to do this renaming right now, but I do want to make sure we do it early in the cycle as opposed to late, so we still keep it on the radar for the next, so we're not, you know, faced with the same decision we made for the last release, to push it. So that's the suggestion, is instead of starting right now, we wait a little bit, let it solidify, see if anything big comes up that necessitates a bug fix release. And if not, then maybe we start it in a couple weeks.
Well, I suppose the alternative is to say that if anything major comes up, we first spend a couple of weeks doing the package renaming stuff and then do a point release after that. You know, folks could wait a couple of weeks for a point release and carry on with their old release rather than going to 3.3 if there's, you know, anything major that needs sorting out in a point release.
Yeah.
That, of course, depends on how major the major thing is. But I also feel that we should probably just say we're going to do some sort of, we might not say this officially, but we're going to do some sort of long-term maintenance of 3.3 in terms of bug fixes, or the most necessary bug fixes, but then move trunk ahead with the renaming and only port in the necessary bug fixes, if there's any.
So you're saying we commit, say we commit right now to doing a 3.3.1.
We commit to doing a 3.3.1 if it becomes necessary. Yes. We commit that if such a thing becomes necessary, we will do it.
That makes sense. So if it's in the past, we've done a bug fix release. Basically, if there's something that is high enough priority. So, you know, if it results in unusable repositories, or, you know, things that where data loss is potential, there's potential for data loss. So those types of things.
Or security issue.
Yeah
that probably be put under data loss. But the last one was data loss and security issue.
I mean, so, I mean, in my opinion, we're going to probably have to go forward assuming that, you know, if we do find an issue like that, then we will, you know, basically have two branches to deal with anyway. You know, one, you know, the maintenance for the 3.3 and then the, you know, renamed trunk or whatever it is, you know. So
yeah.
I don't know if there's a heck of a lot, you know, gained by you know, waiting, unless it's just that, you know, we're not, you know, ready to do that yet, you know. And plus, like with Fezzle, I imagine, I don't know if Eddie's on the call yet, but, you know, being experimental and all, you know, I just think that, you know, at the point where we make that change in trunk, it's likely that, you know, anything, any Fezzle improvements will probably, I mean, there probably won't be enough motivation to, you know, backport that to the 3.3 branch just because of its experiment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just basically, I don't think there's I think the risk of finding, you know, potential security or data loss bugs, you know, I don't think it should be much of an influence on when we decide to, you know, start refactoring trunk. You know, I think it should just be, you know, when you know, we have a person or people ready to do it, you know, just should be based more on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in a position this week to do it anyway. I don't know if anybody else is, but, you know, that it doesn't sound like doing it is something that should really be held up if it was a priority to do it, but it's not really a big priority. It's just, to me, it's just an issue of getting it done early in the process. And if somebody's available to do it, then it would be nice to have their, you know, have sort of free reign of trunk and get started.
To do it in the cloud.
Walk into the furnace. Yeah.
To do it requires a good bit of understanding of how the Maven build system of Fedora works. Because it uses because names, package names, and so on are used so many places. I wouldn't dare to do it because my understanding of Fedora does not really include the build system, just the code.
Yeah, so somebody could throw it into a branch, you know, since it is a pretty large change. Yeah, I was thinking trunk in terms of like doing it against the main line of development, but yeah.
I think it would be a good idea to freeze trunk even if it's done in a branch, to make the merging easier afterwards.
Yeah, which also points at wanting to get it done as early as possible, since that I don't think anyone's currently working on any bug fixes that I know of, so.
No, I'm not, at least.
Yeah, let's see where we're at with that. I think I saw some commits from Eddie were the last ones that came through. But that was, yeah, that was on the 23rd. I don't think we've had any, yeah.
But it is just that when you're doing big refactoring, it's really nice to have one person have the trunk or the branch and let them go ahead and complete a body of work and get it back in and try to hold everything as fixed as possible while it's going on.
Yeah. Feature development. I mean, but I also don't see a problem with, you know, if somebody takes it out and says, okay, well, it's going to take me a week, so I'm going to do it off in a branch, and nobody do anything on trunk. Well, that doesn't preclude someone from doing another bug fix on another branch that's destined for a 3.3.1 release if an issue comes up, you know.
That's right. It's just even like the Maven build, this is a sort of thing where you want to divide and conquer. Take a section of it, get it done, get it back in, and try to keep everybody away from that area while it's going on.
Yeah, so the only potential area of development I know of right now is if there are things Eddie's finishing up on Fezzle. So we probably want to hear back from him on that, but you know.
Well, I think like local everything that's in local services right now can pretty much be done without damaging anything else. And continuing to pull the client and the server apart.
Yeah. If so, it's a pure if it's purely a package renaming in Java, it seems like some POMs need to change too. But you know, the tools that are available to do repackaging could also just as effectively work on the whole thing and just kind of.
That would be the other way, yeah. And you're that's true.
I'm feeling that the divide and conquer mechanism here might have a little bit of difficulty being applied because so many of the Java files use import statements originating from some other module or some other package.
Yeah.
The problem is that you're not just going to update the image manipulation web app. You're going to update anything that references that as well in the cloud.
Yeah. Well, that brings the other approach, yeah, which is to use the tools and pick a day and tell everybody to freeze for a week and let somebody roll through and get it done.
Yeah.
Seems like a good opportunity to just fill out our awareness of where dependencies lie.
Yeah.
For future refactorings.
Would it be worth it? I mean, one, I'm assuming that that we hear from Eddie and he says that he's at some quiescent point with this his Fezzle commits, but would it be worth it to just preemptively create a maintenance branch just for the purpose of saying if a critical bug comes up and we need to fix it, then we'll fix it in that branch and just let trunk be for the repackaging?
Well, we can always create a branch off the tag if we need
right,
to
or off the tag.
Maintenance.
Okay. Yeah, and actually we do have a couple of Eddie's commits have been sent to trunk, have been post 3.3. So we'd need to do that anyway. And that can actually be done at any point in time. So, I mean, if people feel like that makes life a little bit easier, then we can certainly do it now. But I don't see any technical problems with doing it later either.
Well, no, I think off a tag is perfectly fine too. I was just suggesting, I guess, that if we have that much concern, we should just accommodate the possibility. But it sounds like it's already accommodated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as I said, I'm probably not going to dig into this week necessarily, but I wanted to see if anybody else is interested in kicking in on this one. I mean, we can sort of ask the same question next week. But again, not in a big hurry to do it, but I do want to make sure we get it done early in the process as opposed to later. So. It strikes me, though, that we probably don't have a tracker item for this. So,
yeah, I was about to ask about that.
Yeah. So we better do that. Action. So actually we need to create, well, at least for now, tracker items. Three tracker items for various naming updates. So So we got Java XML namespaces and info Fedora URIs so far.
Wait. So have we agreed about the info Fedora URIs?
Well, so far we haven't really dug too deeply into that. I just figured we'd track it, so we want to dig in later on a discussion.
Okay.
We could do that. On the Java side, we're all pretty much in agreement that work can begin on that at any point.
Just be sure to make note of what we decided to change it to. It'd be a shame to like do all that and have it wrong.
Yes. So it is org.fedora repo. It's the root package name, as opposed to Fedora.
Aaron, you're such a perfectionist.
So it is Fedora repo, not FC repo?
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
That's why it's important to document these things.
Yeah.
No, it's our group ID, which is org.fc repo.
I have been looking a bit at the code, and I think that renaming might not be as automatic as we could hope for, simply because there are so many folders, and the automated tools I just looked at, they cannot rename one folder into two folders. And org.fc repo is two folders. That's org with fc repo inside, and then and Fedora is just one. So, yeah, it's just a warning for anyone who attempts this.
Yeah, I did something similar when I renamed the Akubra stuff. I ended up actually looking at tools to do it, and then because it was a two-folder change, I actually had to write a little script to do it, or a little Java program. But it would be great if we could find something that could do it for us, but chances are it's going to take some scripting or tweaking to get it right. Plus, there's the POM and possibly assembly changes to include. Okay. I'm going to send a link to the submitted issues real quick and see if there's any that just jump out as worthy of discussion right now. So I'll paste that into the chat here. So where did we leave this off? So Eddie had entered several Fezzle-related issues, which without him here probably don't make much sense to talk about. And I'm just going up the list here for items that have been submitted since mid-December. So I'm seeing let's see, the first one that's non-Fezzle related. Well, we have one actually in early December from Egbert F. Gramsbergen. That's FC Repo 592. and this was just an issue that I created in response to somebody on the mailing list pointing out that it was kind of weird that dates are stored in Fedora's UTC, but the paths that are used by the default storage, low-level storage, are based on the local date. So I just wanted, before opening this, I wanted to see if changing it that way made sense to other people too.
Seems to make a lot of sense, but what would happen if you got an existing repository that you were upgrading to a new version of Fedora that used different date paths? Would that then possibly cause a conflict?
Well, let's see. It wouldn't. Rebuilds work okay. And I mean, the Fedora actually, you know, at runtime doesn't really care. It's just the allocation. So it would really be a question of if there's potential for conflict.
If you did a rebuild and then ingested an object, could the new date time path conflict with one that already existed?
Well, let's see.
I mean, it's a pretty bizarre scenario because you'd have to kind of like upgrade having ingested an object like half an hour ago and, and you know, hit exactly the same.
It might be a tad more than half an hour.
Could be.
Just time zones being. Yeah, this is 5 in the evening for me.
Yeah, so it could be up to 12 hours or something.
Would you, in fact, want to write a conversion utility to take your old sort of local timestamp-based paths and convert them to UTC before?
We might want to write such a conversion utility, but I could see a lot of people not wanting to run it simply because a relatively large repository, even a medium-large repository, would not want to rename that many folders. It would take forever.
It could take a while. Well, I guess I was thinking of just waiting 12 hours, but yeah, I guess people might not like that. I mean, it seems on the surface, it does seem like there's potential for conflict. Looking at the directory paths are purely numeric, date-based. Date time based.
One thing that's always bothered me is why we use these date times. Why we don't use a scheme based on the PID?
Yeah, actually, the Akubra does, and that's what we're trying to push people toward anyway. So this is kind of a. I mean, it would be fair also to, you know, call this a won't fix if we deprecate the old way of doing this.
It's basically, as far as I can tell, a system to avoid too many files to be placed in one folder because certain file systems cannot handle that.
Yeah, just like hashes would be. And so it is sort of a historic thing. Date-based, and it requires also that you have a lookup table.
And we could do without a lookup table if you could figure out the location of our FoxML file based on the PID.
Yep.
And that should be easily doable.
Yeah, it is. I've done it in Akubra, and I mean, that works. It's just not the default storage option for Fedora right now. So
what's the plan for Akubra as far as, you know, will 3.4 be an appropriate time to consider Akubra, you know, the primary or the default for storage?
I sure hope so. I mean, I think as we talked about at the end of the cycle last time, it needs some testing because it is such a critical component. I mean, functionality-wise, I've been doing the tests with a Akubra's default storage implementation underneath it just fine. But it would be good to get a little more banging on it before we make it the default.
That makes me think that what we're currently envisaging for 3.4 is the Fedora integration completed, a new storage mechanism, and probably some work with content models. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling more and more that this is not a minor release, but just a note. We basically have, if we change the resource index in any significant way, I think we changed every component of Fedora significantly.
Yeah.
But never mind, change the subject.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, but the point that we're talking about here is that this this is really just a confusion thing. I mean, this is something that isn't causing data loss. It's causing confusion for people who might be digging through older repositories, date time structured files. So, I mean, it also seems fair if we can assume that the next release of Fedora is going to have a Kubra as the default storage anyway, and that the date-based path allocation is being deprecated or recommended against or what have you, then, you know, doesn't really seem worth trying to fix it or trying to...
I tend to agree as well, because if it's a confusion issue and we go ahead and fix it and somebody's got an existing repository where we'd leave, you know, the old paths as they are, then you've got double confusion because you've got both coexisting. So,
yeah.
Unless we had a conversion utility, which is, as I said, it would take a long time to run on a sizable repository.
Yeah. Yeah, originally when I wrote this up, I wasn't thinking of the conflict possibility, but because there is that, then it makes it a bigger proposition and thus not really, not really as easy to justify doing.
No, it's not like the path is, you know, there to definitively specify when the object was created, was it? It's just a convenience method for creating a directory. So, you know, it has no meaning as such. It just happens to be a date time.
Yeah, right.
It's never used for anything other than preventing too many files going into the same directory. Check the code. It's not read. You just run through all the directories.
So one thing that this brought up is that, you know, the intention to have a Kubra be the default. So it might be a good idea to convert a Kubra to be the default fairly early in the cycle, since, Chris, you were saying that testing is the main thing that needs to happen. It seems like, you know, having it be default for a longer period of time at least provides us the time of developer testing to give us a little bit better feeling of, you know, if there's any issues there.
So we could schedule a Kubra to be the default, to be put in as the default after we're done with the renaming.
All right, that sounds reasonable. Did we lose
that
Chris?
Will have leave trunk frozen or broken for some time, but probably something we could work around or work with when the problems arise.
So I'm thinking of just changing this, closing this as a won't fix and referencing a Kubra. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Returning to the search, Bill, you had noted, we have a decent sized list. We're coming up on an hour. I'm wondering if, since we had a pretty detailed discussion earlier, that we can table some of this stuff for the next meeting, but maybe if there's anything that's higher priority, we can look at that. So,
are you going to put Java 6 on the list for discussion between now and 3-4?
Yeah. I actually hadn't even created, I don't think I had created an issue for that. I'm not sure.
It seems like the discussion that we had on the list, I didn't see anybody who was opposed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at least creating an issue for that. Target 434, at least for now. And since we're all seem to be in agreement on that, I think we can just submit it as open. I do want to hear a little bit more from other folks that use Fedora, though. I don't get the sense that it would cause a problem, but it would be nice to see what folks are dealing with in terms of Java needs to run Java 5.
So maybe just a note on the users list to see if anyone has any concerns.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just been on the developers list so far, hasn't it?
As far as running goes, I have run Fedora with Java 6 for like forever. Compiling it, I don't think so, but running it, it runs on Java 6.
Makes sense.
I will say, I don't know if this is some kind of weird nostalgia or what, but maybe because Java 1.4 was so interminably long-lived, but it does seem to me like that Sun is a lot more aggressive now about the end of life for the Java versions, or at least actually attaching dates to them. And I've noticed Central IT here at Columbia is right now being significantly more aggressive about getting Java 5 off the servers that they're responsible for entirely.
Oh, so interesting. It makes sense. And, I mean, on the other side, there's probably people out there who are in a situation where, you know, they're stuck with Java 5 for whatever reason. But
yeah, I mean, the centrally managed servers thing is going to cut both ways, depending on, you know, who's managing.
Yeah.
This might have been said right before, but haven't Java 5 just reached its end of life?
Only the SDK, the Java EE 5, is still supported.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's true. I think it's JSE that was that had reached the end of life.
Right. Right, but the Java EE 5 is not.
Yeah, there's an EE 5 I had a link in there somewhere that thread to.
They're going to have to keep Java EE 5 running for a long time because, for heaven's sake, they're still running COBOL from 1962. The big servers are not going to, that are deployed, are not going to move anytime soon. But they're trying to get you over onto a subscription service if you're a Java EE server user.
Right. Yeah, that's what I had noticed. And so it, and certainly Java EE 5 is the spec for that set of libraries.
Yeah.
Is going to be around for a while. And very few people have actually moved to EE 6, I think. I think just Glassfish at this point. But yeah. In terms of Java, the runtime environment, it's just getting harder and harder to even find that. So, yep. Okay, so we'll shoot that out. I can put that on the user's mailing list. I wrote it as an action. Any other higher priority items? Let's see. I'm just going by the priority as submitted. And I'm seeing, let's see, December 19th, Eddie had submitted FC repo 619. Oh, wait. Sorry. Authentication is required for every resource. It's FC repo 615, and I think that's, yeah, that's a Fezzle thing. So we'll wait for Eddie's word on that, I guess. 619 was submitted by Greg Jansen about service deployment WSDL. Can't specify relative URIs in HTTP address.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. It seems pretty straightforward. I mean, he even says that I think he suggests what to change in the code to make it work that way. It seems fair. I mean, you know, not being real thrilled with how the WSDL stuff works in Fedora overall, but I can see how this would be a little incremental improvement that would at least make Greg happy. So this is really just allowing it to resolve against the local server. So I'm going to click open on this one, unless anybody has problems. I don't really see it as a major issue, though. I don't know. Well, I guess, I mean, the argument for this being a big issue is that people would, you know, not specifying your host name makes things more portable from host to host. So that's convenient. I think this is also an issue for Fedora 3.3, since nothing changed. But I'm thinking about, I don't know, my inclination on this one is that it's actually not a really huge issue. Anybody else have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider it major either. Certainly people are able to get by without this fix. It's just a convenience, seems like.
I'm also thinking, I'm trying to remember what those replacement variables are, and that there's that local Fedora.
Yeah, local Fedora server.
Server. So if that doesn't include the Fedora path, I mean, to me that kind of firms up the, I mean, relatively minor status of the issue. If there's another way to do effectively, like, do this on whatever server I'm on.
Yeah. Local.fedora.server in your URLs. So I'm going to add that as a workaround for now in the comments, at least so Greg sees it. And just change the priority to minor and corrected the effects versions. Okay. I'm just scanning this for any higher priority items for now. Standalone. Okay, I had submitted FC repo 603, which was a standalone reusable Java client library for Fedora. So I think this was something that came out of the end of the release process, and I realized we hadn't actually had an item for this, but we've been talking about it for some time, which is something like what we have today in Fedora client, at least the class, but really divorced from the old administrative GUI, some, you know, a Java client library that you could just use with whatever application you want. And I think, I mean, that's been the goal for some time. We just haven't had it written down.
Yeah, I think it was considered to be something that would happen as soon as the Swing GUI was deprecated, and that just hasn't happened yet. So, yeah, it's good to have that as a separate item.
It shouldn't even be hard to do, and we might even be generous enough to put in some Java docs for it, something that the Fedora client has been sorely lacking.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a real good opportunity to do that and think about how people want to use a client library for Fedora.
I think it would be useful just to start with divorcing Fedora client from the GUI and just having that as a separate library and putting in Java docs anywhere and except on the auto-generated things and really having the auto-generated things be non-visible to the user.
Yeah. Let me second that notion. We didn't make it in the last one, but that would be a good refactoring to do.
And one that will be necessary at some point anyway, so it would be nice to get it done.
You bet.
Yep. Okay. Sounds like we're in violent agreement. So that's opened. Let's see, the last high priority item in there right now is FC Repo 600, which is also Fezzle related, so I'm not sure this, So we'll, I assume since Eddie reported it, it's totally valid. So I'm going to,
I actually had a look at the code around this, and it needs a bit of a hacking about. So.
Okay. So I'm going to click open on that one at least. And then I'll suggest that unless anybody has any specifics they want to talk about right now.
Would like to quickly figure out what we should do with the many I reported. They're not just documentation errors. They are actually code errors. Mm-hmm. We can take them from the top. 613. The title says it all. That could be documented away. That we have this parameter that you really must not set to true, and thankfully it's false at default because it will throw general exceptions at you rather than purge. It's just odd behavior because. This force thing is perform this purge even if it would break a data contract.
Yeah.
And we have no data contracts at the moment, so I don't feel it's the correct thing to throw exceptions at people if they do this even if something went wrong.
Yeah. Well, I feel like having force in there is a mistake anyway.
Yeah. Seems like we should just pull force altogether and.
Yeah.
I actually ran into to this issue last week, I think, because I can't remember what control group I was changing things between, but there were some objects that were loaded with data streams and with managed data streams maybe that needed to be changed to something else. And those data streams were defined in the object's content model. So I think it actually, that's the only data contract I think there is in any case, the thing that I tried to use force to do was just to break it with the, to not worry about the content model and instead to do it, I did this weird dance of removing the content model link, purging the data stream, adding a new data stream with the same ID, and then adding the content model link back in.
I actually don't think the data contracts are enforced.
Yeah, I don't think they are. So, I mean, you probably, you know, assumed it worked. And did what you needed to do to make it, you know, not enforce it, which is probably, you know, what other people are doing too. So that's, to me, that's another argument that this force thing, I mean, as a separate issue, we've talked about validating the data what we used to call the data contract, but validation at large, and whether, if you were to make a change to an object that could potentially bring it out of its content model, would you want that change to be, to prevent you from, or would you want Fedora to prevent you from making that change? But that functionality seems to me to be kind of tied up in the validation framework and not necessarily something we would have on the API itself. I don't know.
One thing we could do, what we're doing partly with enhanced content models, is using the state for that. Only active objects, only for active objects are data contracts enforced.
Oh, okay.
So you just set the object inactive, do your changes, and set it active again afterwards. And it's not, and you cannot set it active if it doesn't validate again in regards to the data contracts.
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple way of using state, but still allowing people to perform more than one change, because sometimes you have to do two changes to bring it back into a valid state.
Yeah, I recall when we put force in there, the contracts were tied in with the old disseminators, which were tied to every single object too, and that was. I think at the time there was some concern about the database getting out of sync if you did things incorrectly there. But in reality, it just seemed like it was never really used or implemented. It was just, unfortunately, it was put in there as a placeholder parameter but not implemented. So, you know.
And not disregarded. That's really the problem.
Yeah, not implemented and not disregarded. So, I don't know. I mean, my inclination on this is to say that the solution to this is really to get rid of force, the force parameter completely, and not have that be part of the API. I mean, I guess, you know, we wouldn't necessarily drop it, because we don't want, you know, depending on how we, when we implement it, I guess, but if we were to do it in like a 3.4, it would probably make sense to just deprecate it and at least stop paying attention to it, but also mark it as, you know, we're not using this, and then be able to drop it in future releases.
Seems like if we're not using it at all, it doesn't do anything, and all it does is throw an error. We could just drop it.
Well, yeah. What I'm thinking about is client code that actually provides this value today. Would if we just
the
WIST
API
it,
would not have a problem.
Yeah,
right.
But the SOAP API would, because it expects null or false or something. It expects the value to be there, even if it's null.
So one thing is that we're considering updating the SOAP API to pull together API A and API M. So if we do those, if we do that, then people are going to have to re-implementing certain parts, at least, of their SOAP interfaces. So
yeah,
perhaps
that's
it
true.
Wouldn't
yeah,
be so unreasonable to add this extra change.
Yeah, and there was another SOAP API change we were going to make to do with the RHEL's API, wasn't it? Relationships API, and using URIs, not PIDs, off the top of my head, which we left the parameter name, there's another outstanding change.
I thought we did that, or I might have misunderstood you. Anyway,
we left the parameter name in the SOAP API as it was, to not break anything. But strictly speaking, the actual parameter name should be changed.
I can see how that could be confusing.
Yeah, it's just documented at the moment.
But FC repo 613 and 609 is basically the same thing. It's just purge data stream and purge object. And if you link those to our general reworking of the SOAP API, I don't think we have to do anything more about them now. Because that way we will remember them. I mean, it's three lines of code we can change in trunk anytime.
Yeah. Do we have the issue number for the API M merging change? So API M. I'm looking for it right now.
Actually, I think we should
521.
Just
521. Sorry.
Nothing. I was just thinking we should remove all documentation of this feature and convert the code so that if you accidentally trip across it, it destroys without notice your entire repository.
Oh,
everybody's software needs an undocumented feature like that.
Well, we could also do it so it just does that on April Fool's Day. Okay, this is FC repo 521, so I'm just going to mention that in the comments at least. Like FC repo 521.
Dan, I think instead of deleting everything, it should just convert all the object file paths to UTC time instead of local time to make people think that their repository was deleted.
Okay, so 613 is the same as, or is similar to what's the other number, Asker?
609.
609. Okay, so I'm just adding the same comment to both for now, yeah. Referencing that other issue.
Good.
Okay. So other.
Then we have two errors that are again similar to each other in the data stream profile and the object profile. Attribute is returned that's not in the schema. It's not really nice to return values that cannot be schema validated against the provided schema. But changing that will change the API.
Let's see. So if you pass, so the response has the date time.
Yeah, as an attribute, because you can call these methods as in get me the data stream profile as it was at this time.
Yeah.
And your timestamp is then added as an attribute to the return value, but that's not allowed by the schema for the data stream profile. So it's simple to fix, but it's not. But changing the schema for the data we exchange over the network is not something we should do lightly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should consider the impact definitely. But it seems like if we're just adding another potential attribute value to the schema, we're essentially extending it in a way that is still backward compatible. I mean, we were just to update the schema with this.
Yeah, we could just update the schema, and that would take care of 612 and 607. And I could easily do that. I just didn't want to change any Fedora schemas without consulting the committers first.
Well, let's see. Yeah. It seems like I don't know. That I'm just trying to think of if anybody is using those schemas for validation, then
then they would have problems
changing.
Now.
Yeah, they would have problems now. So seems fair. Go ahead and open those 607, 609.
Yeah, and you can just assign me to them if you're editing them already.
That was 607 and 612, actually.
607, 612.
Yeah.
All right, we got just a couple more on these, right, Asger?
Yeah, let's see, which ones should we take next? List data streams is odd that it lists the MIME type of each data stream, but not the format URI. You have to actually get the data stream of your data stream profile to figure out the format URI, given that these two informations are equal, in my view. Mm-hmm. I think. Feel it's unfair or biased to only display one of them.
Yeah.
That
makes sense. So yeah, I mean, I guess it's arguable whether this is a bug or not, but either way, we want it. I don't see any reason not to do this.
No, there's no reason not to do it, but there's a bit of compatibility. about making it do it because you have to change the schema. This is not just about changing the schema because you're actually changing the return value, unlike the previous set of bugs where the return value will stay at the cells as it is.
But it's also just adding, so it's still backwards compatible.
It should be. And we have to make new versions of the Fedora client and everything, all the auto-generated things, because these new fields will be there.
Yep. So there is an impact, but I mean, this is what we want, and if you know, if people want to use it, then they will need to have a newer version of Fedora client or generate a newer.
Yeah, but they're going to have to do that anyway because we're changing all the package names.
That's true. So do you also want to be assigned to this one, Asger?
Yeah, you just do so. I know where the code is because I followed it back. That was part of the REST documentation. That's actually figuring out what these methods did, not just what they said they did.
Okay.
10. That's actually, object history does something very odd. It's probably the only place where we actually use data stream state anywhere. I'm not entirely certain of that statement, but I think so. Because object history does only, as it's only include. The object history returns a list of timestamps where changes were performed to the object. But it only includes changes performed in a data stream that is active when you invoke object history.
That's strange. I wonder why. I mean,
so if it's not active, what's the return on the object history?
It just disregards changes to that. It doesn't regard the object as being changed if the data stream is not active when you invoke object history. It just goes through the list of data streams in the objects, selects all who is active or has no state, and then gets the timestamps.
just sounds wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does sound
so wrong. I mean, what's the overall purpose that object history is serving? Is it just to give people hooks on when data streams have been modified? Or I mean, I guess if you wanted to get all the dates of modification, you could do it just with multiple calls, right? You would list all the data streams, and then you would do a data stream, list data stream versions on each data stream, right?
Object history gives you a way to know what an object looks like at a certain time. So if you're trying to figure out, you know, do some archaeology on how an object looked at a certain date, looking at the object history would give you an idea of where you're supposed to go.
I think what Ask is saying here is if you had an object where you had a data stream set to inactive, you then modified the data stream, and then you made the data stream active, your change wouldn't actually be recorded in the object history. Is that right?
No. I say that if you have an object where all data streams are active, you don't then go in, change one of the data streams, it's recorded in the versioning and everything, and then as the final thing, you set the data stream as inactive. Someone requesting the object history will not see the changes, see any changes performed ever on the inactive data stream until someone sets it active again.
Yeah, it seems strange. I mean, there's always the compatibility issue, and this one, I think, is a little harder because I don't know if anybody's dependent on the functionality being the way it is right now. It seems odd that they would be, but if we didn't have that to be concerned with, then it seems like the purpose of this method could be served via some other method that essentially just returned all the modification dates of all the data streams, and maybe even with the data stream IDs associated with them. I mean,
yeah, because that's the other half of it. Object history is somewhat lying in that you can change object properties such as label and state without it being recorded because they're not versioned.
Yeah.
So it's a quite misleading method. It just aggregates the data stream changes. But I think we can duplicate the current behavior by saying to actually achieve this, you have to specify only give me active data streams and making it default return all.
So are you suggesting, Chris, that maybe we want to actually change what the method is as opposed to just fixing this
thinking is if we just fix it to act properly, we still haven't answered the question, why is it useful? I mean,
it's a utility method. It takes the lists from all the data streams and then it sorts them. So I get one list rather than 17 lists that I then have to interspace or.
Let's see. So, it could. I mean, just not sure.
It's a strange API method. Because it's a utility method, you could easily do it in a library attached to Fedora, rather than having an API method.
Yeah.
But what it could do is actually giving you the history. The object change histories of those properties that are not data stream properties. But unfortunately, it does not, and I don't think it can. Alternatively, we could actually having it read the audit data stream to check what changes has been performed rather than using versioning as it does at the moment.
It seems like that's what I would expect, that it would be looking at the audit log and producing a history based on that.
Yeah. I mean, that would, but then I'm not sure what the response looks like exactly, but primarily it's a list of dates right now.
Yeah,
but
it's a list of dates, timestamps. Yeah, you can call them dates.
So is it good to have this method just because it's a shorter list than if you got the whole audit trail? Is that why it's valuable? I mean, so one possible way of dealing with this is saying, object history is deprecated. If you want this kind of information, the best place to look is the audit data stream, which you can get via the other methods. Now, who would that just be creating a problem for some people? Would that because the audit trail is potentially large? Is that why it's?
And because you have to the audit trail could actually be used. It's not as straightforward possible because it includes more than just a timestamp. It includes information about what has happened.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. Seems like I'd like to know who actually uses this method today. I mean, if anybody is making use of it, would be good to know. But I guess we could just change it to provide the timestamps. We could do a subset of the audit trail as well. I don't know. Any other thoughts on this one? What the right approach forward is?
Not another thought. The audit trail would be the correct approach. The audit trail has a few other problems, but those are separate issues. About it actually recording change, but not what was changed.
So, I mean, getting this information sounds useful. I mean, if you wanted to present a user list of different versions of data streams and objects. I mean, get data string history at the moment isn't implemented, is it?
It should be implemented.
It is, but it's a per data stream thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So that you have to make multiple calls.
Yeah, so maybe there should be a data streams history to replace object history.
Object history should, I feel, should be tied somewhat to object profile. And that things in perhaps not too tightly, but object history sort of implies things that live at object level. When has these been changed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess ideally you'd be able to call object history and get a list of timestamps that. If you included those with getObjectProfile, you'd see a different value for each timestamp included.
Yeah.
From object history.
And that would require some changes to getObjectProfile as well, but that would be very ideal.
Mm-hmm. But Fedora is mature enough at this point that it's you wonder whether or not you should just put something in to the interface, speculating on how people might want to use it. On this sort of stuff, I didn't hear a clear use case. It probably would be a good idea to do a SurveyMonkey and try to get an idea if this really is needed. And if it is, what do people want it for, to use it for?
The other option, of course, is just to fix object history as is to include inactive data streams. And
yeah. Or put a parameter on there that says include inactive.
And delete it, of course.
And delete right. it, yeah.
Yeah,
so its behavior stays the same unless you ask for more.
I would actually do it as in
the other way.
You get everything except if you ask for less. But because I feel that more people will be misled by not asking for more when they should. Then there's people that would accidentally get less.
Yeah, so an active only parameter. Or
yeah.
Something.
Or just it's unbound by default, and then
right.
you can yeah, specify
fine.
Which one. But
but it's yeah. also one of these methods that it's such a utility method that we really should consider if it actually needs to have its own security policy and so on. At the moment, you can specify security policies both for get object history and get data stream history separately.
Well, this seems to be just providing a kind of a query against the audit trail, right? I mean, it's just a subset of that, the information that's already in the audit trail.
Yeah.
So it seems like it would be, well, yeah, it's another issue, but
I think it's a bigger topic. I mean, we'd sort of touched on versioning and, you know, API methods for sort of clear identification of what versions exist and how we want to identify them are necessary, but we probably don't understand fully what people want out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing to note here is that we've kind of said that we don't use state internally for anything.
Yeah.
And here we're actually using it for something. And that's just sort of a question of do we want to be using state to be performing any kind of functionality, or is that to be left, you know, for use by you know, users?
Yeah, I'd almost be inclined to treat this as a bug and just change it to return everything and not have any parameters and just say it should have never worked that way.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking too. And then we just address the
statement.
Address it as a separate issue if we want to provide better information, and you know, then maybe eventually we can deprecate this in favor of a better one that is clearly serving some people's needs. That we know about. I mean, as Dan said, like if we did some sort of survey, like, you know, what would you want to see? Or even just an informal thing with developers who know Fedora's APIs to say what would be useful as a new version of this. That's kind of where I'm thinking too, is the maybe we actually spin this off into, I mean, we treat it as is and just say, look, it's always been a bug that it's only returned active things. But the functionality as designed is to provide the list of dates that correspond to versioned components in the object, period. And if there's something extra we want, let's figure out a way to add that as a new method or feature. I guess we have a REST equivalent of this, don't we? I mean, it's if you go to the object profile / something.
Yeah, I have to dig it out, but it's present in both APIs.
I think it's just the, if you just go to the PID, object / PID, you get the object, and then / history or something. Yeah, I forget.
Yeah.
I know there's no
versions.
Versions.
Ver-
versions, yes.
Yes.
Just because they're not versions, they're timestamps and so on. So,
well,
and none of the contention mentions that it's only active data streams, so we're not breaking it from that point of view.
The documentation does mention that?
No, it doesn't. So that's
oh, it doesn't.
Fine.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, I like your inclination, Chris, just to fix the bug and let it go.
Yeah. Well, should we, if we just mark this as a bug that's fixable by just allowing, essentially just allowing all data stream versions or all states, then do we now add a new issue for sort of a new and improved history component, or do we?
Yeah, but it's sort of, I have to dig one out I added a long time ago, because it's sort of duplicated by that, there we go, and it's reported. And let's see what I have.
I wouldn't be inclined to add anything else until we have a use case to base it on.
Yeah, we have the FC repo 562, which I feel it is relevant for this one, for a new and improved object history.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm on this one, on 610, I'm saying solution is to fix the bug by listing dates of all changed data streams regardless of their state. And that's it for this issue. And then for the additional, I mean, we're always able to add new issues and talk about them later, but at least for the audit stuff, if people do want the full information on which components have changed, certainly the new and improved audit data stream will serve that need if they're able to, you know, look through the whole XML. But maybe if there's some midpoint that we come up with that we find out that people would find useful, then we can add that at a later time. Okay.
And then just to torment you, I only have one left now, I think. 608.
Okay. 608.
That's a REST thing, but it's default behavior, so it's not. Someone might depend on it, of course.
Yeah. Has state default to A, so we'll always set objects. So if a person specifies the state, then that will be respected. But if it's
that
not.
That will be respected. It's just. Odd that it feels the need to change the state of an object unless you tell it not to change. The state will always be changed, perhaps just to the same thing as were before.
Oh, for modify object.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, that. I was thinking it was for add for some reason, but. Yeah, that seems strange, because all the other parameters, if you don't specify them, just stay as they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this
seems
like
and it doesn't
like
need to change the state. It's not necessary for the method to be invoked and so on.
Seems like a clear bug to me. I mean, if somebody depends on it, then I would have hoped they had recognized it was a bug. I mean, I can't see why anybody would depend on that. functionality. It seems more likely that it has incorrectly set the state for people who don't realize it.
Yeah, and most people probably don't use the state for anything, so it hasn't bitten anyone yet. But
yeah.
It did bite me because we used state.
Yeah.
And it tried to set objects active so they were validated when I didn't expect it to.
It strikes me that I know, you know, a lot of people don't use state, but it strikes me that if people have policies that depend on state especially, then this could potentially expose information that people never told the repository to expose. I mean...
Yeah.
It's likely to work the other way around, though, isn't it? Well, are you saying if we leave it unfixed, that is the behavior, isn't it? Because people could be inadvertently setting stuff to active when they want to keep it hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, treat it as a bug.
It's just one annotation, default value, that has to go.
Yeah. So I was thinking about the priority, like, because, well... I don't know. Maybe it's far-fetched, but it just strikes me that if people are using this and don't realize it, they could certainly be exposing information they never intended to the outside world. Is this the same for modified data stream?
I have to check. And it's only REST API, by the way, because it's a REST annotation. It's not deeper inside. Data... That class will state is not set by default on modified data stream, but versionable is set to true by default.
Okay. So, I don't know. I'm still a little inclined to up the priority on this one. Does anybody else have that feeling, or is it just maybe I'm being paranoid? But
I think you're being paranoid. But we could do it. I think you're being paranoid because it's part of the REST API, rather than the SOAP API or the behind the scenes Fedora workings. Mm-hmm. You actually have to modify object pair. Per the REST API for this to happen.
Yeah.
But I think we could up the priority. And we should probably announce it. Should it be considered something that requires a point release? That really depends if it depends on stuff. You can work around it by not specifying. By specifying the state.
Yeah. So it seems like there is a clear workaround. I mean, it's just if people don't know, could be an issue.
Well, we can just document it and say that it will be fixed.
But yeah.
A warning for now.
Yeah.
Perhaps we can announce it on the mailing list and see what people say.
Yeah, it seems like it only really matters if someone has a policy, you know, based on that. So,
yeah, that's true. So it's not. I mean, there's a chance it's not affecting anybody in a really negative way. It could be confusing, but I think at least adding a comment to the REST API docs would be a good thing for people for now, just to document that it's in progress and will be fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah, Esker's right in that it's a one-line fix anyway.
Yeah.
So it's regardless of the severity that we set it to, it's going to be an easy fix.
Yep.
One quick question that came out of some of these discussions, basically the last one, actually. we don't use state internally. So if we use state in any code, it should probably be reported. Is that correct?
If we use state in code, it should be reported where? Or?
To the other committers, because there's a lot of the REST, some of the REST data stream functions. For example, the update data stream refuses to perform updates on a data stream in the deleted state.
True.
And so and in that, it's not a biggie, but in that we're actually attaching some meaning to deleted, which you could say we are already doing by calling it deleted.
I think if the REST API is doing that, it's a bug based on what we've stated. I mean, because it's different from the SOAP API, right?
I mean, yeah, I would think so. I have to check, but it's specifically done in the REST API. It's not just inherited from the common API.
Yeah, and that seems like, I mean, if it disallowed something based on the state, that seems like something you would want to do with policies, not, you wouldn't want to hard code it. I think we actually have a policy that should be covering that, too. I mean, one of the default repository policies, I think, is like, disallow something if state equals deleted, or it's ringing a bell. I'm not. Let's see. Yeah, server. Yeah, well, yeah, that sounds like a bug to me. I mean, if, because unless there's something preventing this from being true, I think the statement that Fedora doesn't care about those values should still hold. I mean, we should assume any violation of that is a bug, unless, you know, otherwise, unless we come up with some other good reason to use those, but, yeah.
Fine. In that case, when I encounter them, I will flag them as bugs. Probably just reporting them on GR.
Makes
shouldn't
sense.
Be that many places, but I still have some investigation to do in the APIs while I finish the REST API documentation, so I might come across it a few places.
Okay. Good. Well, thanks. That'll be good to have those logged as well. Hey, any more?
Not for me.
Okay.
Just looking quickly through the REST API, it looks like the only other time we use state is just to set it to active on creation of objects. And
That I feel is fair.
Yeah, because we need a default. If somebody didn't specify something, we have to have a value.
We actually don't have to, as far as I know. But
I think the schema requires it, but
okay, yeah, we might actually require it, but there's a lot of places where we check for it not to be null and so on. As where we regard null as it could have this value.
Yeah,
I actually didn't check the schema, so on. So you're probably right.
Okay. I think we've got through a fair number of these, and we can continue next week. But I think we should go ahead and conclude the call for today. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you hopefully next Tuesday, and maybe we'll have a few more people on the call, too.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Chris. Hi.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
The moderator has disconnected.